Welcome to meeting number 2 of a 3-day online intensive with John Sherman, broadcast live from Ojai, California on October 22nd, 2013.
Okay, everybody, this is John. Today, as you must know, and as Carla also told you, but you must know from the schedule itself, we're going to speak about the act of looking at yourself, which, of course, is what everything is about here. The other things we talk about have to do with the context and the results and so forth and so on. But today we're just going to talk about the act. In that regard, one of the most important things to understand about the looking, as we've come to call it, is that the act itself is trivial. And it's much more easily done than expected. What makes it seem so difficult is that the feeling of you here that you are looking for in this act of looking is so faint against the background of all that's happening within your mind, the experience of life unfolding, and the warfare in thought that is going on trying to defend you from the experience of life. In the midst of all of that noise, this field of view is very faint, and it's very difficult to, it's not difficult to do, but it's very difficult to know that you've done it. It doesn't take much. It takes like a half a second of actual contact with your attention to the feeling of you here. And of course, when I say you, what I'm talking about, and we've known for some time now, that one of the most important things we try to do is to talk about what it is we want you to look at in a way that is not abstract or leaves open all kinds of ideas about what we're talking about when we talk about you. We're not talking about consciousness. We're not talking about awareness. We're not talking about true self. We're not talking about any of that. We're talking about you. And when I say you, what I'm speaking of is that feeling present always that if you notice it, you would call me. For you, it's me. That simple first-person pronoun is critical to understanding what it is that needs to be accomplished and tasted in order for the looking to work. And that sensation, it is a sensation. Everything that you experience is a sensation or mediated by perception. And that sensation is so tiny that trying to get that taste of you in that environment is like kind of like trying to get the taste of the clear water that is, after all, all of the fluidity in a soup or a stew. Trying to get take a little sip of a soup without being distracted by the rich flavors that have been dissolved into that clear water, but instead to get a taste of the clear water. It's kind of that hard. And it also happens that it's not uncommon for people to do it and not know that they've accomplished it. It can be, part of that has to do with the faintness of the experience itself. Part of it has to do with the extremely short time in which attention can rest there. Nanoseconds, I think. Maybe a second. So keep all of that in mind, that what we're talking about is not a big thing. It's not something that you're just missing because it's, because we're perverse or some other reason, it really is very, very hard to feel that you have accomplished this act of looking. But the good news is that that doesn't matter, because we also have found, in my own experience and Carla's experience, and now in the experience of many, many more who have come to this, that the most important part of the act itself is your intention to get that taste of what it feels like to be just you. It's the intention that's important. It's not the confirmation of success. As actually it makes great sense that since the main element here, the context, the container of the entire mystery that is you, is ever present and easy to see. You can't not see yourself. You can't not get a taste of yourself, whether you notice it or not. Just as when you taste the soup, there certainly is that taste of clear water within that symphony of flavors and so forth that is the soup. You may not be able to taste it, but you're there. I hope that's helpful. It doesn't matter whether you can confirm your success or not. The confirmation of your success is what follows after your attempt. So, first of all, before we go any further, if you haven't looked, or if you're unsure whether you have, we're going to start by just doing that act of looking together now. Okay. So start out by just relaxing for a moment. Just kind of relax. Close your eyes. And now I want you to notice what I'm going to ask you to do is in order to bring to your attention what it feels like to be attending to some phenomenon present in your mind. I want to call your attention to what attention feels like. Anything will do, a thought, a physical sensation, an emotional state, anything at all will do for this purpose. The purpose of it is merely to acquaint yourself with what it actually feels like to look at something with your mind's eye. You see, there's two parts of that, right? There is the looking at something with your mind's eye, but that act itself has a feeling to it. And I want you to acquaint yourself with what that feels like, because everything we are doing when it comes to looking has to do with the direction of attention and with the purposeful direction of attention. So do that. Look at something with your mind's eye, with the attention, and notice what it feels like to be looking at that. And then move your attention to something else for a moment, anything else, another thought, another itch, or anything else, for just a moment, and notice what it feels like to deliberately move the focus of attention from one thing to another. First, you are noticing what it feels like to attend to something. Now I want you to notice what it feels like to move the focus of attention from one thing to another. When you have done that, using nothing more than that ability to direct your attention, when you have done that, look around now among all of the things that call for your attention, looking for the very faint, almost imperceptible feeling of you here, or what you would call me. Let's just be quiet for a moment and see if you can get just the slightest taste of what you feel like. Now there is one further hint that people have found to be useful, and it is actually the way in which I myself, many years ago, 16 years ago or so, longer than that, 18 years ago, what I myself did that accidentally brought me in direct contact with this, the reality of what I feel like. And that is to remember something that happened to you in the past. Generally speaking, a vivid memory or from the past, from youth as a child is the best, but anything that you can remember, something you were doing in the past, and you can kind of remember it with a, density to it. And when you get that, it doesn't have to be anything. It can be anything, the most trivial thing or the most important thing. When you get that, when you can get that memory fixed in your mind for a moment, see whether what you felt like then is not the same as what you feel like now. Now, many people have found this to be helpful, and as I said, it's what I did in the first place accidentally that led me to you here in the end in this meeting. Okay? So, that's how to look at yourself, and you can't fail. You can feel like you failed, but you can't fail. So now let's talk a little bit about what happens when you do look, when you do succeed, which, as I say, is almost, it's nearly impossible not to succeed if that's what your intent is. The result of the looking is pretty clear now, with the experience of so many who have experienced it and reported on their experience. It's not just Carl and I. There are literally thousands of people now, and hundreds of whom have come back with to relate to us their experience in the aftermath of the looking. So here's what happens. Bringing your attention to the feel of you, the apprehensiveness, concern, and unease about you and your life that has been the default assumption guiding your mind until now, those ideas are snuffed out. The apprehensiveness, the concern, the unease, snuffed out. They just go away. Keeping in mind that the apprehensiveness, concern, and unease that I speak of as the default assumption, not as a present experience of concern, apprehension, and unease. The present experience of those things are certainly the strengthening of those experiences in result dealing with the way your life is unfolding. But that underlying assumption, that underlying conviction, that life is something not to be trusted immediately disappears. But it leaves behind all the psychological structures that form to protect you from life. Those are all still alive and well. They are doomed now. They no longer have the foundation that's needed in order to support them and to make the feedback loops work so that they get constant confirmation that what they're doing is what they should be doing. But the structures themselves, they stay for some time. They will, all of them eventually, if you live long enough, they will all of them eventually disappear and be replaced by new psychological structures that are not guided by the assumption that there's something wrong with me or my life. New psychological structures that meet life fully, that engage with life fully, and that lead to complete satisfaction with your life and with your activity within your life. And as they fall away, and the new psychology untainted by fearfulness begins to appear, there can be considerable distress that accompanies it. But in the end, take heart. It's not going to hurt you. It's not going to drive you crazy. And in the end, when the balance of sickened psychology and healthy psychology flips, you go sane. And you welcome life with self-reliance and satisfaction. That's what happens when you look. We'll talk more about the details of what happens when you look in regard to how that falling away of those psychologies and the emergence of new psychology actually takes place and the actual more detail about what can be expected. We'll talk about that more tomorrow. But be assured that no matter that you may even feel like things get worse, that you are on your way once the looking occurs. And once you notice, see, the noticing of the distress, the noticing of the apparent worsening of your mental state is actually a confirming sign. And you will learn, and we will talk about this again tomorrow, you will learn how to become more effective and more useful in shaping the relationship with your life. And you'll find it to be quite wonderful. The last thing I'm going to talk about a little bit here today is the business about, and I mentioned it I think before, but the business about whether you have to only do it once or whether you have to keep doing it or whether continuing to do it as a practice or something will be useful in the way things unfold after the looking occurs. There's a natural, many of us come, pretty much all of us come from lives in which misery is the norm. It's, you know, sometimes strong, sometimes weak, but general misery, general discontent is the norm. We all come from that kind of life. And we all come with deeply set, unexamined assumptions that have appeared and we have subscribed to as a result of the misery, as a result of the contaminated environment. And one of these unexamined assumptions seems to be the idea that it cannot be as easy to accomplish as it is. And a belief that in some way, a continuous practice of trying to look again and again and again is needed to develop and maintain sanity and love of life. Well, it turns out that if it is the case that more looking is needed, more looking will take place automatically. And that it also turns out that the conviction that we must force ourselves to continue this as a practice in order to get it right or in order to hasten the recovery or for any reason whatsoever, is just not true. Our minds, our human minds have formed in order to allow us to have the close to direct experience of life as it is and to find satisfaction there. There are certain things that can be done as the effects of the misery pass away. There are certain things that can be done, and again, which we're going to talk about later, that can be helpful to you in the way of mental exercises and things of that nature. But the looking really is left behind. And the day comes when it's just so obvious the feel of you, it's just so obvious here that there's no point, actually, to continue to try to look. The looking is done and over with the first time you do it. And it, again, if it's not done and over with the first time you do it, it'll take place automatically on its own. You'll find yourself in unexpected situations just kind of getting it, a little glimpse of this feeling. And you'll like it. But do not, any idea that there is a necessity to turn this into a regular practice, or that by continuing to try to look at yourself, you will mitigate and make easier the transition from insanity to sanity, that's just false. In fact, if anything, clinging to that idea, you know, like insisting that that might work is, since that idea itself is a symptom of the problem in the first place, can only prolong the period of recovery and the time when you find yourself sane, immersed in your life, and satisfied. Okay, that's it. That's all I have to say so far this morning. As always, I would love to hear from you. I would love to have a conversation with you guys, or any of you, or all of you, about the things we're talking about here. So I'm going to shut up now and wait to see if you guys want to talk. If you don't want to talk, that's okay too. We can just sit here together. But if you want to talk, raise your hand and we can work together. Okay? Raina.
Hi, how are you, John?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm good. Okay, thank God. I'm someone who, after a lot of years of therapy, I figured out that I have trouble knowing who I am. So how does someone like myself with that issue look at myself, if that's my question, or that's my issue in general, knowing who I am?
Well, you know, of course you know who you are. Whether or not you have a definition of yourself, of course you know who you are. You're here. That's very clear. The idea that what's neat, you see, and this is the thing, that this is a very good question. And the reason it's a very good question is because it calls to mind one of the ways in which we sabotage ourselves. The problem is not that we do not know who we are. That's not the problem. There's nothing whatsoever in the things that we know and don't know that are themselves the source of the problem. The fact that we feel we don't know who we are is a symptom of the problem. The fact that we feel that that's what we need to do in order to get free of the problem is a symptom of the problem. The fact is that who you are, and again, this is such an abstract concept that it's very difficult to parse it, to break it down into its pieces. But the idea that you don't know who you are is, or even the idea that you need to know who you are in some way that you don't already know, is is a false trail. And it cannot help you in any way whatsoever. If you're talking about who you are in the most primitive and natural way, who you are in that way is this faint feeling that you are seeking when you try to do this looking that we talk about. If that's what you're talking about, then there's nothing really to know about you. there really isn't much of anything to you except your presence here and the sense of you present here. If you're talking about who you are in the sense of the psychological structure, that is pretty much the same thing as life. I mean, we experience life only by means of the mechanisms of the mind. The mind receives sensational experiences, maybe from the brain, and forms perceptions about those experiences and develops ways of relating to those experiences and so forth and so on. If you're talking about that as who you are, well, that would be what we would call your personality. And your personality is your footprint in life. And it is constantly changing. If it weren't changing, then you would be like stiff and all tied up in knots, which may be the case for many of us, trying to keep it from changing. But it's always changing. In a sane mind, in a mind that is not afflicted with this environment of distrust and alienation from life, in a sane mind, the psychology is constantly adjusting and changing itself. And the idea that there will be some static thing that is you is revealed to be, well, just kind of a product of the fear, a kind of freezing. So knowing who you are is natural. If it's your personality you're talking about, knowing who you are is your experience of life as you, as it unfolds over time. It's not a fixed thing. Do you follow me?
I appreciate a lot of what you said, and in some abstract or faint way, I understand what you're talking about, but it's pretty abstract, and it's hard to put into words, but I do understand a lot of what you said, so I appreciate it.
Yes, it is. And I speak about it in order to give you some place to hang your hat and have some sense that things are going to turn out all right. But the day will come when it will not be abstract at all. The abstraction is trying to make a thing out of what I am describing. It's not a thing. It's a life that's endlessly changing, unfolding, moving. So you'll see, but I'm glad to be helpful to you.
Thank you.
Okay, anybody else? Feel free to raise your hand. Suzanne?
Well, since no one else is raising their hand, I thought then I will talk to you again. About the question that Rainer just had, I would like to ask because I often think that there's something wrong with my personality, or that there are things that will never be fixed. But do I understand it right then that by looking, it just gets fixed, or you just don't have to do anything besides that?
You say that the looking personality being fixed. Is that what you just said? What you asked me?
Yes.
Yes. Actually, that's the short version of it. Your personality will go sane. You're the kind of the way in which you relate to the world, which is your personality, will go sane. The things that are quirky and don't work and are you kind of don't like, and that's all part of the psychological structures that I speak about, which is, you know, it's the conglomeration of those psychological interactions with your life and with themselves that are kind of diseased. and some of them are more diseased than others, and it's not exactly natural, but it's ordinary that we all feel like, oh my God, I wish I didn't think that, or I wish I didn't do that, or I wish I didn't look like this, or I wish I was more of this and less of that, and so forth and so on. That internal conversation about your personality, and it's personality. It's the way in which person manifests in your mind. That's what it is. And that conversation that's constantly going on about, oh, I wish I could be more like that or less like that and so forth and so on, that'll just die out because it really holds no interest in a mind that has gone sane. What's interesting in a mind that's gone sane is not to figure out how I should be or how I should not be, but to engage with life directly and develop skill and understanding that will serve you and guide you in your relationship with life. So that kind of internal relationship with your personality just kind of goes away. The personality heals itself, and over time there may always be some aspects of the disease that remain for a long time. That's been the case with me. But after a while, that internal conversation still ceases. And the whole need to stand aside from the way in which you are engaged with your life in order to judge it and try to make it better and so forth, that whole conversation ceases even when there still are remnants of the old psychology present there, because they no longer do any harm. They're just like Japanese soldiers in the jungles on the islands who thought that the war was still on for some years after it was over. Do you follow that?
Yeah, it sounds great the way you're telling it. So,
would you encourage everyone with the things you say? And I'll keep my head up and stay hopeful.
And Suzanne, everybody, not just you, Suzanne, but everybody, since this is not what we have persuaded ourselves that we need, which is some kind of an instant fix where everything is all right, everything that was wrong turns right, and life just turns into a bowl of cherries in a heartbeat. Since this is not that kind of thing, the participation in the community of people that are involved in this is the most helpful thing that you can do for yourself. Is to, like I said yesterday, and I think I saw that you either signed up for it, or I saw something about you. But for everybody, getting involved in the community of people, many of whom are looking back at what you are experiencing now, can be helpful not only to you, but to all of us. So one of the ways in which the fear has crippled us, it has created an assumption that I'm on my own and that I'm either going to get well or I'm not going to get well. And if I do get well, then maybe everything will be all right. And if I don't get well, then I'll just go to hell. But the fact is that we human beings are all in this together. And that's not just a platitude. That is proven in the experience of the people who are involved in this work and helping one another in the forums and other community venues. So, and then you see, you begin to see that the things that people are talking about there are things that you have experienced yourself, and the things that people are talking about there that you have not yet experienced for yourself were the natural development of the mind of those folks from a time when they were crazy. And we can help one another. And I tell you, we really do need to help one another. We're in quite a fix these days. So is that helpful?
Yes, and I actually opened a topic at the forum, so I find it very helpful indeed to read all those stories of people and to connect with people who've been there or who also are in the middle of all turmoil. So
that's what I saw. I saw that you signed up as a user. I haven't seen your posting yet, but I will later on today.
Yeah, so I can advise to everybody who's listening right now to actually go to the forums and read all experiences so you can read that you're not alone with all this.
So, that's very good advice.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Suzanne. Rose.
Thank you for today. This is the day I am perhaps most, I don't want to say interested in, but the one that I was so much looking forward to, where we get really specific about the looking itself. And when I followed what you told us to do today, it's when I have my eyes closed, there is like a sensation that when I think back to any time in my life, there's always this sensation that I would call me, I guess, or a sensation of me, or that I experience every day of my life, probably, just a sensation, very subtle, very, when I close my eyes, it's not, I just want to ask you some questions, it's not the pulsing sensation that's there when you close your eyes, like the vitality in your body. Is that correct? It's not that. And then when I close my eyes, it's more like, and it's not just like if you relax and just, it's almost like a body sensation, but it's not quite a body sensation, but it is a sensation.
But it's very faint.
Yeah, and is it close to a body sensation in the sense of...
Well, you see, Rose, everything is a sensation. Like moods are a sensation, and then there's thoughts about those sensations, like with moods, for example. Moods is a good example, I think, because we don't generally think of a mood as being a sensation. It's a state of being or something. But really, it is a sensation, and people have learned that about which thoughts are being generated, and the thoughts are what we mostly pay attention to because they seem to be the most important. But people have noticed that it is quite possible to notice that the mood itself is a sensation and the thoughts are perceptions about that sensation. So everything, even the thoughts themselves are sensations. Everything is a sensation. And you, the simple, clear, uncomplicated faintness of you present is a sensation. And the effort to distinguish body sensations from other sensations is just confusing. If what you started out, when you started out talking here this morning, You were very clear that you had actually had that sense, that taste, that sense of you here. And once you start wanting to define it in a context of body sensation versus what I don't know what other sensations there are, but once you start defining it, then you just get yourself confused. There's no need for you to doubt that you have accomplished this act, Rose. And the first words out of your mouth when you began speaking made it very plain to me that you have accomplished that act today, if not before, and probably before, given my history with you, and I've known you for a long time, and I've seen the way things have changed with you. So that impulse to find a finer definition in order to in some way confirm that actually I'm doing this right, or this is actually what you're talking about and so forth, is just part of the symptoms of the fear-based psychology that remain, which are trying to defend you against the possibility of you being wrong. And there's just, there, you're not wrong. You have looked at yourself. And the way in which you described it before you started trying to define it more in more detail was perfect. It just rang so true to me. So that impulse to make those definitions, as I said, that's part of the symptom picture of a mind that has been afflicted with the fear, and that has lasted for a long time. There are other quirks and traits probably still present in your mind that have been around for a long time, but you don't have to worry about them. And there's things you can do about them once you consider the possibility that they have no meaning other than as a now obsolete way of relating to your life. And we'll probably talk about that tomorrow, or if not tomorrow, the day after. But there are things that can be done that make you more skillful at recognizing things that just really are not worthy of your attention, that really don't need your attention, and that your attention actually prolongs their presence in this mind. Do you follow that?
I'm guessing or imagining that what you referred to there at the end when you said there are things you can do to be more skillful, are you referring to like where you say just feel your breath, don't get lost in your thoughts, drop thoughts?
Well, what I'm referring to is something that is more detailed and developed than that, but essentially, you know, that's a hint of it. But we don't have to worry about that now, but like, we're going to worry about that tomorrow. we only have time for one thing at a time, and I tell you, Rose, that you have tasted yourself. It is so clear to me, so plain to me. And you'll see, like tomorrow when we talk about methods to help you make the most of the period when the old psychology is still hanging around and you know, throwing its dirty cigarette butts on the floor and so forth. We'll talk about that tomorrow, and you'll see that it's practical stuff, okay? But you're okay.
You know, when I think of every moment of my life, it's easy for me to remember many childhood moments, high school moments, college moments. It's all pretty clear to me. It definitely feels exactly the same. I mean, that's why I think you said once years ago, you look in the mirror and you're really shocked to see that you're like not 21 because you feel exactly the same inside and you don't recognize who this person is because you feel the same. Is that what you're referring to? That thing that has always, I mean, we always
feel. Yes, I'm talking about you. That's exactly what I'm referring to. And you can, and please just don't worry about that. You've done it. You're on the road to health. You've done it. It's so obvious. But yes, that's exactly what I'm talking about. And it's the same thing as looking in the mirror. However, it's not as to the point as when you are using the contents of your mind that without, bringing to bear some artifact to help you with it. But you said it, you know, every time you remembered vividly things in the past, and every time you felt just the same as you do now. You don't have to worry about doing the looking anymore, Rose. You really don't. You can look. And it's not unpleasant to look, but don't worry about it, okay? we're going to talk more about tomorrow about practical ways to hasten the departure of these things, but don't worry about it. Okay?
Okay. Can I ask you one question, since this is what we're talking about today, just so I can get the questions out. When I close my eyes and do it, there's like the sensation, let's say. Again, words are not accurate in any way, but I would almost say like a black space kind of feeling. But then when I open my eyes, it takes a lot more recollection and intention and effort to try to notice that sensation that's always here. Is that true for you? I mean, is that right? It's easier with your eyes closed?
Yes, whereas it's true for everybody. The world of visual experience is extremely strong. And so, of course, the reason I ask you to close your eyes is because when you have not done it before, that closing your eyes makes it a little bit easier because it takes away a lot of that visual stimulus. But again, Rose, don't worry about that. Don't keep revisiting that. Move forward. We're gonna talk about things to do that have nothing whatsoever to do with trying to confirm that you have actually accomplished this. Don't worry about it. It's you. You're not going to go anywhere. You're not going to suddenly not be there. You're there, and you have seen that, and you have your mind has already gone through a number of changes as a result of seeing that. The thing that is most helpful is to turn to the community of people who are just like you and who have the same kind of experiences. My role is not so much to reassure you that you're doing the right thing as a result of you describing to me what things feel like and so forth. That's beside the point. You have done it. And everything you report to me is indicative of the fact that you are actually in this period after the looking when you are still afflicted with a certain, a certain quantity of old habits and old tics for relating to things. Trust yourself. Don't bother with all of this. Trust yourself. You have looked. You're going to be fine. And tomorrow I might be able to give you some more help as to how that can be confirmed in you, and how it can serve you in the future in life as it changes and unfolds from here on in. Okay?
You know, I had emailed Carla within the last couple of weeks. There had been someone at your retreat last year who had mentioned that in the interim between when he looked and when he found some kind of, I don't know, I'm going to say, improvement in the quality of his life or something. I mean, I know that's not a cool thing to say, but my point being where he felt he'd really gained something worthwhile, or how, I know that's hard to say, but anyways, and he said that in the interim period, he was very porous. And I feel the same. I feel like I don't have that strong, like any kind of ego protection or armor, and that I feel everything so just wide open, you know, all heart. And it's really, very, very, it's a very difficult anxiety producing, intense experience. Like, I feel a lot of joy, but I also feel tremendous anxiety and, you know, despair. I think back to when I was younger, and I never was like this. Fortunately, I had
You are in the recovery period. What you're describing is the period that we call the recovery period. We will deal with that in some detail tomorrow. Don't worry.
Okay.
Everybody goes through it.
All right.
And comes out the end quite satisfied.
Very good.
Okay?
Yeah.
All right. Well, it's really good to have you here. But
Thank you. You too. Thanks.
Okay. Carla emailed you yesterday, by the way, about something. So, okay, we actually are out of time, but I can't possibly leave without saying hello to my friend Don Wolf.
Now, I have to tell you, for years, John, you've been talking about the recovery period. A lot of the stuff, here's the lesson I've learned. Within a minute, I can say it. The whatever it is, the system that the fear leads to, is so intent on surviving at any cost that it's incredible, but it's not like that anymore. I didn't analyze it. I didn't wrestle with it.
Right.
The things that bothered me so terribly, of which you're so aware, just they're there, but they're inconsequential.
Yes, that's right.
And waiting a long time for that to happen, but it's nothing that, I don't know why it happened over the past, it just did.
Yes, I know.
And that's a very peaceful thing because I tried to pound my way into it for so long and it came in its own sweet time. And I just wanted to mention, I'll be here tomorrow too. I'm sorry I got in so late, but it's well worth it.
Okay. Yes, I know. We'll talk about all that tomorrow. I'm really happy for you, Don. Yeah, I'm tickled pink.
I appreciate it, John. I'll be here tomorrow, too. Have a good one.
Okay, my friend. Be well. All right, that's it. We're going to cut this off now, except for Carla. Carla needs to talk to you. And I love you all, and I'm so happy to have you here with me and working with us.
You've just listened to meeting number 2 of a 3-day online intensive with John Sherman, broadcast live from Ojai, California on October 22, 2013. For more live recordings, visit our podcast at www.justonelook.org.